In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every other Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Hi, everyone. Welcome to A Psychic Story. For this episode, I have Charisse Williams, and we are going to chat about practical magic and all things witchcraft, tarot, and maybe even ghosts if we have time. So welcome to the show, Charisse.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So excited to get into this with you because there are a lot of misconceptions, I believe, around witchcraft and what it entails. But before we kind of dive into that, I wanted to just hear your story. And if you don't mind sharing with the listeners, what got you into this line of work?
I feel like it was always kind of something I was interested in. You know, I was always interested in ghost stories and witches and magic and everything like that. Like anything like weird and kind of out there, I was always drawn to. But I was raised with very Catholic family and very Lutheran family. And so I was raised with the mentality that witches are evil. And all I saw was, you know, what you see in movies. And so I never really kind of looked into witchcraft until I was about 18. And then I was at a bookstore looking for books on dream magic. And at the time, the whole little metaphysical section was like 2 feet long with like 20 books or something. So everything was crammed together. And there happened to be a witchcraft book. And I was like, well, what is this? And for some reason, I pulled it out and I just opened it up. And the first page I opened it to was a list of what witches are and what witches are not. And I'm reading through it. And first of all, I'm like, okay, this is not what I have been led to believe. Like, but then the next thing was like, oh my gosh, this is what I always thought like a spiritual path should be. Because Christianity never, there's things I love about Christianity. That can be a whole other topic. Because I do love Jesus. I love Mary. But church, but yeah, we'll save that for another day. Anyway, it just never resonated with me. I had too many questions and it always just felt like there were missing elements. But then when I was reading this list, I'm like, holy crap, like this is it. So I bought the book and then that started my witchcraft and spirituality practice. Tarot, I actually got my first tarot deck when I was 13. And so that's how that started.
So when you found the book, what age were you?
18.
You were 18. Okay. And then what did you tell your friends and family for a while, or are you just kind of reading up on it? And
I told friends because at the time I was living in a different state. And so the friends I made there, they hadn't known me my whole life or anything. So no, not really. When I moved back to my home state, Ohio, I did move in with my friend who I'd had since middle school. So she knew that I was always kind of weird. So I don't think she really thought anything of it. But yeah, and honestly, it wasn't really, I mean, my family always knew again that I've never really hidden the fact that like I love crystals and burning incense, and they knew that I read tarot cards and stuff. But it really wasn't until like the last few years, even 5 years, that I've really claimed like, yeah, I'm a witch. My mom, I think, is still kind of like, I think the word still kind of weirds her out because every now and then she'll be like, what's with this witch business? I'm like, oh my gosh, we've talked about this.
Yeah, the stigma about it. And I practice it. I guess I could call myself a witch too, but not really realize that I'm doing it, is that there are different levels, right? Like that as far as like how much some people may just dabble in it. Some it's actually like a religion, so to speak. And can you share a little bit about what that looks like? Like if there are different kind of
I mean, just like if you, you know, run a race or run a marathon, you may be like way in it and doing it like all the time. And then you may just be like doing it occasionally. So are there like different levels and of involvement, I guess I should say?
Oh, yeah, totally. I think so. I mean, you bring up a good point. It's kind of like people who work out. There's some people who work out like, you know, once a month. Then there's people who work out like that is all they do. That's all they research. Like, yeah, so there's definitely, I mean, it's a whole big spectrum. But really, I mean, so many things that we do are very witchy. And this kind of then brings up the whole topic, too, of exactly like what is a witch. You ask any witch, you're, you know, 50 witches, you're going to get 50 different answers of what is a witch. Because a lot of people think just doing like folk remedies, you know, things that our ancestors used to do that were just normal, like let's get these herbs from the garden and make them together and, you know, use this to help get rid of whatever. That today could be seen as a form of witchcraft, even though really it's just folk healing, it's folk remedies. There's a lot of overlaps, but I mean, blowing out candles on your birthday, I mean, I think we've all done that at least once. Like you're literally, you're thinking of what you want and you're blowing out a candle. I mean, that's our earliest form of candle magic that any of us do.
You know, I never even thought about it that way. I really didn't.
Yeah. The same with when on the playground, you know, have you ever said sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's literally you're casting a charm. You're speaking a spell into existence. So it's little things like that that people don't even realize could be counted as spell work, as witchcraft. So yeah, it's a lot more. I think people are pretty much everybody's a lot more witchy than they realize.
You mentioned like it wasn't until a few years ago that you kind of really embraced it more publicly. And, you know, I'm assuming that like with your friends and family, it was just something second nature. They didn't really, well, they may have like still had questions around it. They didn't question the fact that that was who you are and what you do. But why did you decide to kind of just come out fully to everyone?
Well, one, I think it just makes people like labels for things. And I can understand that, but I think sometimes labels go too much. Like there's, especially on TikTok, I have such a love hate for TikTok and witchcraft, but so many people like, well, I'm a sea earth magic candle witch. Like, you don't need to give yourself so many labels, you know, but I think calling yourself a witch kind of just does let people know like what it is that you do, especially if you are doing things as a business, which I am like, hey, I'm a witch. You're doing business with me.
There's a level of authenticity to it too, right?
And I think it's also just a matter of like kind of reclaiming that word. Like it felt powerful to me. By not saying I'm a witch, I almost felt like I was suppressing a part of myself or almost like a part of me was ashamed of what I do. And I'm like, that's stupid. I'm not ashamed of what I do. I think it's awesome.
So for your general, not only business, but what it is that you do on a day to day, what kind of things, you know, do you do? I'm just curious because I do the candles for birthdays, right? And, you know, some light things around the moon and all of that.
It is funny when you sent me questions, you're like, what are some, you know, just day-to-day simple magic things that people could do? I really kind of had to sit for a second because I'm like, I guess I don't necessarily think of it all the time because it's just something I just do. Yeah. Like for instance, making your morning coffee. When you're stirring and you can stir clockwise to bring things into your life, you know, I'm stirring my coffee and I'm thinking like, I'm going to have a good day. Today is a wonderful day. So right there, that's a super simple form of magic to start your day off is just stirring your coffee or your tea or whatever clockwise. And what else? Even with cooking as well. Like if you're using different herbs for cooking, like last night I was making potatoes for my family. Potatoes are grounding. So while I'm chopping the potatoes, I'm kind of infusing them with the energy of keeping my family grounded and our home secure. While I'm sprinkling in the rosemary, I'm thinking of removing negativity from our lives. And
so it's a lot of intention in that case. And that really brings another perspective to that whole, it was made with love. You know, when you, like if you, somebody makes you a sandwich or they make you something and it's like, they almost seem to cook it and follow the exact same steps that you did, but it just tastes so much better.
Yes, that is a perfect example. Like it literally is. Like your grandma makes you a pie and it tastes amazing because it literally was baked with intention of love and she put that magic, that energy into it. And so that's why it tastes so different. That's an excellent point.
So cooking, well, I'm going to have to try that because yeah. I don't, you know, even this morning when I made my coffee before we got on this call, I was like, not even thinking, I just stirred it, you know, erratically. Like I got to get this, you know, really quickly. So that energy or that intention, whether or not you're thinking about it or not is getting in there.
Yeah. I mean, energy is everywhere. And so I think really one of the big bases for witchcraft is being aware of energy, how you can manipulate and affect energy, and how energy can manipulate and affect you. And it's about just kind of working with those energies or harnessing those energies to your benefit or to somebody else's benefit, or I guess if you are somebody who does do curses or hexes, to their demise. But yeah, it's really just kind of about living with intention.
So you did the cooking and you were just for each ingredient and potential intention. So that's great. That's also like another layer, I guess, of if you wanted to really ramp it up, right? There's also, I think of food too. I never until recently didn't think about it from this standpoint, but when we sit down for meals, and in some cases, depending on what religion you are, you pray over your meal and you're thankful for it and grateful for it. Some people do it every day. Some people just do it on Thanksgiving, but that's also another way too. So even just prayer. So you might not think that prayer is a form of witchcraft, but it's a form of energy. It's a form of intention. Yeah. What are kind of just some other things that you had thought of?
Real quick, touching on that too, you can pray. Like, you don't have to be a religion. Witchcraft isn't a religion. There is Wicca that is a religion, but not all Wiccans are witches. Not
okay.
All witches are Wiccans. Because you can be a Catholic witch, you can be a Buddhist witch, you can be a non-secular witch.
Is it almost like a lifestyle then in that case?
Yeah, it's more, well, it's kind of witchcraft practice because it's more, you know, so if somebody practices yoga, they can be any religion, no religion, any belief system to practice yoga. So it's, you know, or if you practice your violin every day, like you don't have to be a certain religion to practice that. It's the same with witchcraft. You don't need to have a specific set of beliefs necessarily. But so yeah, praying is wonderful. That's another form of, you know, like spoken magic or even like thought is, I mean, you're thinking or speaking in your head. So yeah, praying is amazing. So just if anybody's listening and they're like, well, I'm not Christian or, you know, I don't pray, like you can pray. It's fine. A couple other things. Oh, one of my favorite things is for self-love. So if you want to get really fancy with it, you can take your lotion that you use for your body after the shower every day. And witchcraft doesn't have to be like in movies and stuff, they make it super elaborate with these spells that rhyme. And I mean, you can do that if that's your thing for sure. But if you feel cheesy, like saying these things, or you're struggling to come up with like a rhyme to say, it's, you don't have to rhyme. You can literally just hold your bottle of lotion and say like, I am putting self-love and confidence into this bottle. Every time I use this, you know, it infuses my body with love and confidence and whatever. And then every time you use that lotion, as you're rubbing it in, you can say an affirmation. Affirmations are a form of spell work, can be, you know, spoken spells. So as you're rubbing the lotion in, you can say whatever affirmation you want. I love my strong body. I'm thankful for my body. Right there, that's a very simple form of magic for yourself.
Yeah, that's really powerful because, you know, I was thinking about the other day, being in this line of work, as far as the spiritual work, the light work, and I would love to do it full time at some point. But right now it's like, you know, building up the business, right? And I started to think about it, I'm like, I'm so intention based with so many things, but not when it comes to necessarily what I'm eating or what I'm putting on my body. And the thing, like you just said, of taking the moment and taking the time to be reflective in that self-love is regrounding, rebalancing yourself and bringing in that energy that can have the space to come in and the permission to come in a lot of times. And those are really simple things that people can do, that it doesn't require you to have to read a book or do a lot of research or anything else. I love that. That's great.
And then, I mean, if you are somebody who works with crystals as well, like you could keep some rose quartz because that's for self-love. You could keep that next to the bottle of lotion to help infuse it with that energy as well. I mean, that's what I love about witchcraft. You can keep it like as super simple as you want, or you can like add in a couple extra things like some crystals or whatever, or make it really elaborate and do like a whole ceremony based on self-love and this bottle of lotion infusing it with magic and energy. Another thing, so this just happened yesterday. I made a post about it, and this is one of my favorite ways to do magic. Really, I always say I like simple but powerful, because I think a lot of the time, at least for me, the more steps I add in, I feel like the less it or the more it takes away from the energy for me, because then I start thinking of, okay, I need to do this step, and I start focusing on what I need to be doing rather than feeling it. And so I really just kind of love to do magic that's just right in the moment. And working with the wind is one of my favorite things to do, is speaking into the wind something that you either want to bring to you to manifest, or something that you're trying to get rid of your life, out of your life. So I like to use like storm winds to get rid of things, because storms just feel powerful. Like, and you can just go outside. I sometimes, because I do have neighbors, so if I'm not feeling like I want them to see what I'm doing, I just kind of like go out and put my hands, just kind of palm up, or you can go outside and put those hands way up to the sky, and just really feel the wind. And you can either say it out loud. I like to say it out loud. You don't have to scream it. You can just speak it quietly and say what it is that you're wanting to get rid of out of your life, and speak it into the air, and just keep repeating it until you feel like the wind has carried it off, and just kind of feel and envision it being taken from your life. And then the same can be said for like warm summer days where there's a beautiful breeze coming through. If there's something that you're wanting to bring into your life, kind of do the same thing. Speak it into the wind and know that as the wind carries it off, it's delivering that message to whatever or whoever needs to hear it to help manifest that thing into your life. That I love to do, because you can do that anywhere. And it's so simple, but it feels so much more powerful than you think it would, because you're really just kind of taking a moment to center yourself and to connect to an element of the earth. And it just feels very grounding and powerful.
You're speaking to my soul with that, because I want to say maybe 5-6 weeks ago or so, there was this huge storm where I live. And I went outside and I could just feel all of the air kind of flowing around me. And I didn't say anything, because I didn't know really to do this or think to do this. But I was just standing there and I was like feeling that cool energy kind of coming in and the wind around. And I was thinking to myself, you know, this is really powerful. I know I'm supposed to be out here. My guides and angels were like, go kind of out in the middle of the storm before it really starts getting bad, and just like feel it and embrace it. And so I think that that's awesome. And then I've also been seeing a lot on social media with people right now with spring and going outside and kind of making picnics and just really enjoying the earth as it's coming in. So that's also something that while you're out there, if you're already doing something, whether it's a walk or you're in your backyard or you're taking breaks during work and you're going outside, that's something that you can probably really embrace and do as well, but just be thoughtful and behind what that intention is. And I love the aspect of also verbalizing it and bringing that into being and being into this space. So what's with the bay leaf? I saw something, like I was just scrolling at some point and somebody was saying I got my bay leaf out, and I guess that there's a lot of different herbs and things like in your kitchen that you can do, but what's that entail?
Well, a lot of herbs actually and crystals can be used for multiple things. And that's why it's also important for intention. And I think I have a YouTube video about this.
Well, I can definitely, if you have one, send it to me and I can include it in the show notes.
Okay. It's about the importance of, you have this tool, this herb, and you kind of need to like tell it what you want it to do, because bay leaves, for instance, can be used for removing things in your life, but then they can also be used for like good luck and bringing things into your life and like making wishes. So it's kind of like you need to sometimes, it sounds so funny, but sometimes I like tell my crystal like, okay, this is what we're working with, or like the bay leaf. Okay. I'm waking up the energies of good luck in you right now. Like that's what I'm working with you for. It's just another layer of like being intentional. But yeah, a lot of people like to use bay leaves. You can write on the bay leaf, like whatever it is that you're bringing into your life. So like, I need $100 or the name of somebody you love, which I'm not a big fan of love magic, but you can write what you want and then you burn it. And it just kind of releases that into the universe to manifest.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for all those tips. Was there anything else before we moved on to tarot?
No, if you're curious about witchcraft, like look into it. I suggest reading a lot of books from different people. Scott Cunningham actually is a really good author he has a book called Solitary Wicca. And even though because he is a Wiccan author, but he's also a witch, and I think it's just a really good starting point. He also has a book called Earth, Air, Fire, Water. And that kind of just helps teach you about, you know, starting with magic and different little simple things you can do as well.
Okay, great. Well, I will include those both too in the show notes for people that are interested. So tarot, so you mentioned you went at 18 really into Wiccan or into the witchcraft a little bit more, but at 13, you got your first tarot deck. So what was that like?
Well, at the time, which this is a misconception that you have to be gifted your tarot deck, that you're not supposed to buy it yourself. I don't know where that started, honestly.
Yes, I don't know, but the exact same thing happened to me. I stole my deck from either my grandma or my mom. My sister and I had this debate about it. And then later, every time I was like, I think I want to get a different one. My mom was like, no, it has to be a gift. So then it would be a gift gifted from her. But yeah, I don't know where that started. But yes, you're right.
I don't either, because I've purchased, other than my first deck, which even then it was pretty much me purchasing myself. I've purchased every single one of my decks. I think maybe I've been gifted two of them. So my friend and I, we were in Spencer's Gifts in the mall. And we saw the tarot decks and we're like,
which is the best place to get a tarot deck, everybody. If you've never been into a Spencer's, look it up. You can get lost for hours in those stores.
I haven't been into a Spencer's in a million years. I'm going to have to go in.
I don't even know if they still exist, but yes, you're right. I
don't know either. So we saw the tarot decks and we were like, but we can't buy them ourselves. So we each took the exact same deck up to the counter and I bought one and she bought one. And then we left the store and literally just exchanged them, which was
That's
silly.
Funny.
But yeah, that was, I don't know. I've loved tarot forever. I got in trouble in middle school because I brought my cards to school and was trying to do tarot readings in the hallways and the school didn't enjoy that. So I was told to not bring that ever back or bring that back ever again. But yeah, that just kind of started my whole thing. And really at the time, I would read occasionally for friends and stuff. And my aunt brings up, do you remember when you used to be terrible at tarot readings? I'm like, yes, leave me alone. We all start somewhere. Oh,
you weren't great off the bat when you were self-taught. Why not?
So I would read occasionally for some close family and for myself, especially when I was like really going through difficult things. And I mean, to be honest, from about 14 to late 20s, I was going through a lot of difficult times. So that's really when I would turn to the tarot. It was probably about 8 years ago that I really started like every day kind of pulling cards for myself and really making it much more of like my daily practice. And then that transitioned into doing readings for others. I'm not terrible at readings now, by the way.
Yes. Well, especially if you're going to be selling them or offering them as like sessions, that's a disclaimer. I'll have to get a reading from you because I have been self-taught myself and I don't really follow all of the, I know that there's the upright cards, the down, you know, the different types of cards and how they fall. I'm more of I leverage them or I use them to like, if I'm not being able to tune into energy to some extent, and I'm asking for clarity from someone's guides or angels, like what else they wanted to share that I'm just not getting. It's almost like a, you know, slap upside the head of, here's what we're trying to say. But yeah, what are some, like, how do you work it? What do tarot readings look like for you?
So occasionally they will predict things like there's so many different types of readers. So my style of reading tends to be more of helping you figure out what it is that your spiritual team is trying to tell you that you just aren't getting. They help provide clarity on situations. They give some guidance as far as, you know, maybe which direction you should be heading. One of my old friends, she used to say that the cards were kind of like a counselor in a box. And I really like that. Like, I mean, I'm not a counselor, like I'm not licensed for counseling, but that's kind of how I see the cards, is kind of just like a spiritual counselor that is just there to help give you advice, give you insight, give you clarity.
Do you have a favorite deck?
The Rider-Waite-Smith deck. That's the one. Yeah, just the original, pretty much the deck that every deck since then has pretty much been based on or inspired by. That was my first deck. And so that one will always be, I think, my favorite. For client readings, I use a deck called the Witch's Tarot. Love it for client readings.
How many do you have? Just out of curiosity.
I actually have more Oracle decks than tarot decks. I'm kind of really picky with my tarot decks as far as the artwork and the symbolism and everything. So I still have a decent amount of tarot decks, but much less tarot than Oracle. So,
okay. We have to do me a favor and like stack them at some point and take a photo and send it to me and just be like, this is how many I have.
It'll have to be a video because I'm like looking around. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Then that's fine.
Here's a lot of the ones I use for client readings. And then I have
That's your next reel or TikTok video, right?
Woo! Okay. I could do that.
I'm giving you.
I'm like, oh, I forgot about that deck over here. Oh man, you're calling me out on this though.
No. The only reason is because
no, it's fine. I like sharing decks. I love seeing what other ones people have and use.
Yeah, and you mentioned Oracle. So tarot, I'm familiar with, but Oracle, I know that there are like different other decks that are different from that. So what are the differences between the two?
So tarot is a divination system of 78 cards, and there's 22 major arcana cards and then 56 minor arcana cards, which are then broken into suits, kind of like playing cards. There's pentacles, cups, wands, swords, and they go from ace to 10, and then page, knight, queen, king. And then pretty much, I mean, the meanings can kind of vary a little bit based on the deck and the artwork, but the core meanings and symbolism of each card is the same no matter which deck you use. You know, the Ace of Wands, you can pull from 15 different tarot decks with different artwork, and it's all going to have at its root the same message, the same symbolism. And so that's kind of tarot. I mean, even if there's different artwork, there's cat tarot, there's mermaid tarot, there's
fairy tarot I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, anything you can imagine. And the artwork can really, really vary too. I mean, some really stick with the Rider-Waite-Smith system, and then others really deviate from the imagery of that. But again, it's just the 78 cards, no matter which deck you're using, all kind of have the same core messages for each card. Oracle decks, on the other hand, they can be 10 cards. They can be 70,000 cards in the deck if they want. They can be whatever sort of messages, symbolism, artwork. It's really just much more of like a creative, however you, the artist and the creator, want it to look like. It doesn't have to follow a specific system.
Great. Do you ever use that, or is it primarily, it sounds like, the tarot that you focus on?
No, I love Oracle cards, and I love incorporating tarot and Oracle. Like for my daily draws for myself, I usually always pull a tarot card and an Oracle card.
Are there any like tips or tricks if people were interested? Obviously, like reading up on it and just seeing if like there's a certain, well, one, getting a deck, right? just to try out whether it's tarot, Oracle, but any other sort of like tips, and also about like protection or grounding. Is there anything that you do before you are reading the cards?
Not for myself, I've realized. I just kind of shuffle and pull for myself. When I'm reading for clients, though, I usually do a prayer before I pull for clients, but mostly just to help me stay grounded and to help me connect with their energy, my client's energy. That's one of my like favorite forms of magic, is like protection and cleansing and stuff. So I'm usually pretty well protected and cleansed and grounded just in general. So I don't usually always do like something special to like create that space, I guess.
No, I feel very well protected. In the beginning, though, I did a lot more prayer and protection work because it was so new and I wasn't sure, but now it's like, I feel like I have this army around me. So, yeah. And it's for me now, it's more of a kind of like what you were talking about. Sometimes you don't think about it. It's like, I'm always constantly calling an Archangel Michael or whatever else. And it's just a quick like, hey, you there, right? Okay, great. I can feel his energy.
Yeah.
And then it's not a bigger process, but I would probably recommend for anyone who is starting out and getting a deck, like just a simple, I'm calling in my angels and guides for protection, not to make it scary. It's just that when you're new to certain things, it's just a good way to have a backup team, right?
I would say, especially if you are like nervous at all, or you are kind of like, oh, like what's going to happen? Then yeah, definitely you want to kind of protect yourself. Like you said, call on your angels and spiritual team to help protect you.
All right. Well, anything else on tarot that you had wanted to cover off on or discuss and share?
Definitely. I mean, get a deck that you feel drawn to. I do usually recommend the Rider-Waite-Smith deck for people, just because a lot of tarot books that you'll get, they are based kind of off that imagery. And I think it's just kind of like user-friendly, that because there's a lot of details in the cards and imagery you can go on and symbolism. But if you're not drawn to that deck at all, then just get whichever one you feel drawn to. Because if you don't feel a connection to it, you're going to really struggle with reading. And then secondly, it is important to know like the base meanings of the cards, but always go with your intuition. If you're looking at a card and the guidebook says that this is what it means, but your intuition is like, nope, this is the message that we're giving you, go with your intuition always over what the book says. you know what the book says, but listen to your intuition first.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the Bible, right? Where, or even in some cases, it depends on how you interpret the Bible, just like how you interpret the cards. So it's really more of a guiding post or a way for you to, like you said, that intuition to tap into it and trust your gut first always, because that's going to be, it's coming from a higher place. And that's always where they kind of wiggle themselves in to make sure that you're getting that message across. But yeah, the other thing I will say before we kind of break on tarot is I heard one time a while back that if a card falls out, like let's say you're shuffling it or a client's shuffling it or something else, if a card falls out, that's always a good thing to potentially like take a look at it. I practice that just because I feel like, you know, everything happens for a reason kind of thing. And it's amazing what things like you, if you're asking a question and then all of a sudden this card just like flies out or falls down, first thing a client usually tries to do is put it back in the deck. And I'm like, no, wait, I want that. What is that card? And then 9 times out of 10, it like hits the nail on the head with what they were asking about.
That's another thing too. It's kind of like go with your intuition. Like I don't always read. For the longest time, I tried to make myself read reversals, the cards that are upside down. And it never worked quite well with me. I was always, I don't know. It just didn't feel right. And so finally one day I was like, why am I making myself read with reversal? Like you don't need to read with reversals. And so I stopped doing that. And so it made my readings just go like flow so much better. And then the dropping cards as well. Sometimes I will, like because I'm just kind of a messy shuffler sometimes. So I tend to just drop cards, but it's one of those, I feel like that's such a cliche saying all the time, just trust your intuition, but it is true. Because sometimes the cards fall out for me and I'm like, okay, that I am supposed to put to the side. And then other times I'm like, okay, that was just me being a messy shuffler. So yeah, it really all just does come down to trust your intuition.
Yeah. And I hope people kind of are hearing this and like, well, you're telling me a million different things. Which one is it? But the point is that it doesn't have to be complicated. And it makes sense to me that you two don't do the reversed cards, because I think that if you're somebody that's really into it and it feels right to you, then that's great. But for me, it was like, it was almost complicating the message. Like you were saying, you like simple but powerful magic. Yes. And that's exactly it for me. And occasionally, if a card is reversed, what I'll look at is I'll be like, there's a point there. There's something that I need to dig into a little bit more, ask some questions, and then I'll pull different cards later. But yeah, it just complicated it a little bit for me. But yeah, so if you're interested in tarot or any of the more like kind of practical magic tips that we talked about, that's something that, you know, you can, obviously I'll include all the details in the show notes, but feel free to kind of do your own kind of research. And if you have questions, you can always reach out to Charisse as well. Let's get into, while we have some time left, about ghosts. So how did you get into ghost hunting and all of that? and why? So I guess I shouldn't even really ask the question why, because if you're doing witchcraft and you're also reading tarot, that it seems like just a natural transition of just somebody that was here on earth that is no longer in the physical body. But I'll let you share your story.
So ghosts, I always say, were like my first love, like ghost stories. I remember being a little kid, my dad would tell me scary stories and ghost stories. And when I'd go to the library, like that would be the first section I would run to, was the paranormal section, to read about like ghost stories from all over the world. And I remember saying, like, this is what I want to do when I grow up. Like, I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to talk about metaphysical things and ghosts and like, but how am I going to do that? Because at the time, like when I was a kid, the internet didn't exist. Kind of old. That didn't come around until I was like in middle school.
You mean the Googler didn't exist when you were a kid like me?
The Googler? Nope. Blogs didn't exist. YouTube didn't exist. So I'm like, how am I going to do this? And I was like, well, I guess I could write a book one day or whatever. But so I kind of just put that on hold. And then I remember there was a show on MTV called Fear.
I don't remember that show. I'll have to look it up and see.
Oh yeah. It was so, I loved it. Cause it was like one of the first, it was when reality TV was kind of first coming out. And this was really the first kind of like ghost hunting type show that I saw. And I remember I had always said, I want to spend the night in a haunted, insane asylum. And my cousin was like, you literally are insane. Like, cause she is not into ghosts. She's terrified of them. But so yeah, I always said things like that, or like, I want to spend the night in a cemetery. And she's like, what is wrong with you? But so then this show came out and it was literally like a group of people. It was a competition show, but they would put them in haunted prisons, you know, insane asylums for the night to do these crazy experiments and stuff. But I was like, oh my God.
Was the goal to see how long they would stay?
Yes. If you could make it through the night, you like won money or something like that. I don't remember. I didn't like it though. Cause now looking back, I'm like, I wouldn't be doing some of this. Cause they would have them do like, you know, they'd open up an envelope, like, here's your task that you have to do. And if you didn't do it, you got kicked out. But it would be crazy things, super irresponsible, like instigating, like going into a jail cell and like, you know, being super aggressive with the spirit or asking the spirits to like take over your body and things like, and like, ooh, now looking back, that is not very safe. And then I saw years later, there was Ghost Hunters, the original Ghost Hunters. And I remember watching it and I was like, this is what I think ghost hunting should be like. You know, they kind of take a scientific approach to it. It's not just them going into a haunted place and screaming and like running around terrified. Like they're actually going in and trying to establish contact. That was really a groundbreaking show, I think, because if you look now, pretty much every ghost hunting team kind of bases how they do things kind of on how Ghost Hunters did it. And so it was at that time I was like, wow, people actually like can get together and go to these places and do these things. And I joined a group in my city that did the same thing. So I got to go to private residences and establishments and abandoned places and investigate with them. And that's kind of how it started. And I kind of did it a little bit off and on for a while. That was like 12 years ago or something, 13 years ago. But then it was really like the last year and a half that I kind of was like, I don't need a team. I can go out by myself, and made it more of like my main focus.
So what was your kind of favorite or most awe-inspiring experience, like ghost experience, whether you were on like an actual investigation or it was just a personal one? I have one that had terrified me as a child, but at the same time, I look back on it and I was like, I really needed that experience. It was just one moment. And I was like, I needed that one experience to, because I'm a, if it doesn't happen to me, I don't fully kind of believe it sort of person. So that to me was a gift. But yeah, I like, I don't know if I would actually, well, I probably would with somebody like you, but I don't know if I would actually just go hunting for ghosts without like an experienced team.
Yeah. It's not as scary as some shows. Like, I'm just going to call them out, like Ghost Adventures.
They do a lot. In the beginning, they did a little bit of the instigating too.
Yeah, they do that a lot. Yeah. They go in and demand for the ghosts to show them. So there's yet another topic that I could talk all day about, but they're not my favorite. So ghost hunting isn't necessarily always like terrifying like that. I mean, you do have scary moments here and there, but my first experience with a ghost, I was about 7 and I was at my grandma's house and I was in my aunt's bedroom. She's more like my sister. We're close in age. And I was waiting for her to come into the room to go to bed. And I was sitting on the bed and all of a sudden I see this shadow figure. I mean, I couldn't see like facial details or anything, but it was clear shape of a person. And it was about my height, walk past the bed to the window. And I'm like, just looking at it, like, what in the world am I seeing right now? And I'm like trying to process what I'm seeing. And I could tell that it like turned to face me. And I got the feeling of it being like, holy crap, like she can see me. And then it just disappeared. And I just sat there. Like my little 7-8-year-old brain, like trying to process what just happened. And my aunt comes in, she's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I told her what happened. And then she sat down, she's like, okay, I guess I can tell you now. I'm like, what? She's like, our house is haunted. She's like, we, you know, things happen all the time. We just kind of were hoping you wouldn't notice. We didn't want to scare you, so we didn't say anything. She was like, but now you've seen it. So
have to tell you. Yeah. Well, at least it was validating too, that you experienced something and it wasn't dismissive as well.
Yeah, I think that that was a pretty important moment. The fact that she wasn't like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You didn't see anything. It, like you said, it was validated. And so I didn't have to like doubt myself. I'm not one of those people that had, you know, unfortunately, some kids have that experience and they don't share it with anybody, or they are, it's dismissed. And so then they grow up like doubting. And that's kind of, I mean, either way, I think it propels your search for, you know, what are ghosts?
It's still a confirmation no matter what that something happened, but it's better, I think, when especially an adult or another third party can validate that for you, because then you know that it's, again, just confirmation. But so her house was haunted. Did you experience anything else there afterwards, or was that the only one time there?
I want to do a whole, I just need to be in the right energy space for it, because I want to do like a whole, I don't know, do my own documentary or something on this neighborhood, this house, because the whole neighborhood, I think, is haunted. My aunt's boyfriend, two doors down, his house, they had activity. My other grandma lives in the neighborhood behind this one. And
Was this in Ohio? Just out of curiosity, because my family's from Cincinnati, so.
Near Columbus. So, but yeah, I mean, there was stuff all the time. You'd hear, footsteps on the basement stairs. The shadow figures were just all the time. It got, like, I wasn't even scared of them. Like, you'd be sitting on the couch and you just see it walk past in the hallway. And you're just like, oh, okay, hey. Or knocking on the bedroom door. That would always be the weirdest. My cousin and
I. Oh, that would kind of creep me out, especially when you're trying to sleep.
It was weird. But I mean, I was always like, this is cool. My cousin's like, this is terrifying. We'd be playing Nintendo in the bedroom. We'd have the door shut. And then we'd hear like knocking on the bedroom door, clear as day, like, and we'd open it up and there'd be nobody there. And we'd shut the door and then it would happen again. And it would just like happen repeatedly. And we would yell at our younger cousin, thinking it was her messing with us. And she'd be like all the way out in the backyard or something. So that happened a lot. Just, yeah, things like that.
So when you were younger, that was kind of like your first experience in your aunt's house. Mm-hmm. And then it was, it was repeated after that. And there were just a lot of experiences. Yeah. Did you have on any of your investigations that you've done that just kind of stood out to you?
Yes. I actually was just at Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. That was amazing. I feel like I keep saying, well, I have a YouTube video, but I do. I have a YouTube video talking about that.
I will include that too. But yeah, no, I saw that on your Instagram and it seemed really cool, but I couldn't tell because I haven't watched the video yet. I couldn't tell because it was just almost like teases of content and pieces of it. But yeah, I want to go back. Maybe I'll do that later today.
Yeah, it has EVPs in it and stuff. One of the investigations that always stands out the most is because it was the saddest EVP that I've ever gotten, which if people listening don't know, EVP is electronic voice phenomenon. That's where you do a recorder and when you play it back, you hear a voice or a sound or something that you didn't hear at the time with your own ears. And it was a private residence where they said that there was a ghost of a child. And I was in one of the bedrooms recording and you hear on the recorder me say, okay, let's go to the other room. And as I was getting up to leave, you hear a little kid's voice say, why are you leaving? And it was like the saddest, like, why are you leaving? Like, what the heck? Like, we were hanging out. Where are you going? And that one, it just, that one just tugs at my little heartstrings.
Yeah, because it's a child. Do you ever release and help the spirits move on? Do you put anything like that in practice? Or is your methodology and approach just more like in and out and like leaving them be as peacefully as possible?
I mean, I do try to be very peaceful. You know, I approach them with respect. I try to approach the spirits just like I would a flesh and blood person. Even when I've gone to prisons, you know, I may be like a little more stern and protected with the spirits of prisoners, just like I would be if I were going to talk to a prisoner at a prison. I might be a little bit more guarded. But even then, you know, I still kind of show respect. And as far as like crossing them over, everything with the paranormal, I feel like in spirituality, like kind of ebbs and flows and my opinions change and stuff, depending on my experiences or things that maybe new things I read or learn. I don't know how I feel about crossing spirits over, mostly because I know plenty of people have a really good idea of what the other side is or looks like. But at the end of the day, I mean, we are, at least in this lifetime, flesh and blood humans. And so I don't know if like, we don't necessarily know the mechanics of it all. And so I don't necessarily think that it is always good to cross spirits over because it may be like, well, where are you sending that spirit? Or
that's a good thought that I never really thought about it in that standpoint, I guess. Sometimes there's the residual energy and there's not, and it's not a spirit or a soul that's like trapped and it's just the residual of it. And then in some cases I've seen or heard where people are like, this energy needs to move on, but you're absolutely right. Like, who are we to say that energy needs to move on?
And I don't want to do anything to like potentially force them to move on. So, I mean, I do tell them, you know, like, do you know that you have passed on? Are you, you know, aware that you no longer have a physical body or more just kind of trying to get to know, like, well, why are you here? Like, do you know that you're dead or is there something that you need help with? Or more just kind of trying to like talk to them and give them some clarity that maybe they don't have, or, and just kind of like let them figure that out. Because I feel like they know better what's going on over there than I do. So sometimes, yeah, I think it all takes is them hearing like, oh, wow, so I'm not living. I don't have to stay here. Okay. And then maybe they go on.
And then they have the choice kind of thing.
Free will. I think that, yeah, spirits deserve free will just as much as physical humans.
Unless it's some sort of malevolent spirit that needs to move on, then it's, or there's a protective, you know, a situation where a family is living in a situation that needs protection. Then I think it's more of the,
Yeah. Like, I mean, if it's your home, by all means, like set those boundaries, kick any spirits out, whatever. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to a haunted place that is the spirit's home, you know, how would you like somebody coming into your house and telling you like, you can't be in this room, you have to get out. You'd be like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, who are you?
And that's kind of the same for them. I mean, I guess though, too, if it is, again, like a malevolent or trickster, like harmful spirit, then yeah.
Well, this has been amazing. I know we covered a lot, so hopefully the listeners were able to, you know, stay with us on it. But I just thought it was really fascinating to show the progression and the fact that, you know, in some cases we dive deep on one specific topic, but then also that there are so many different facets of if you're interested in something or you want to learn more or then start to build something out on your own, whether it's part-time or full-time or whatever, that you have that ability to do it. And I thought it was really cool to just see that you do all of those at once, but then yet with such passion for each. If people wanted to get like a service with you, like for tarot or any other sort of thing, where can they go and what does that look like? And, you know, also anything else that you want to kind of share for people as far as resources on your side?
CheriseWilliams.com would be the best place. That's where you can find links to my tarot readings. And then I sometimes do group spell work. If there's somebody that really wants like individual spell work, they can contact me and we can figure something out.
Great. So CheriseWilliams.com, that's C-H-E-R-I-S-E Williams. And then also your Instagram, which I enjoy following, is CheriseWilliams.xo. That's what's, and then what's your YouTube?
CheriseWilliams.xo.
Okay, great. So you have a good brand out there. It's easy for people to find you. Well, anything else you're being led to share with the listeners or that we haven't covered that you wanted to bring up?
I guess I feel like no matter what it comes to, trust your intuition.
Trust your gut and, you know, your intuition. It's always there to guide you. And it's never steered me wrong. The only time it's ever steered me wrong is when I haven't listened to it. So, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And not only your time, but just your energy and sharing your story and about everything else that you've gone through. And hopefully it encourages others. And yes, if you guys really enjoyed the conversation with Charisse, please reach out and give her some love. And thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Yay, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about? Or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-1881. We'd love to hear from you and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters.